Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Lifehacker Podcast. It is September 19th, and this week we are talking about a little bit of iOS news, why you should take another look at widgets on Android, and how to survive inside Apple's walled garden.
We're also answering your questions about Powerline Ethernet adapters, whether or not to quit a job that you hate, and how to get notifications for messages Facebook deems unworthy.
And as always, we'll be going through our favorite tips and downloads of the week, so let's get started. Everyone, welcome to the show. I am Whitson Gordon.
I'm Adam Dodges.
And with us, we have Eric Ravenscraft joining us via Google Hangouts. How's it going, Eric?
Hey, I'm doing okay.
Except for the can't tell when we start broadcasting live, making silly comments.
You only had to ask three times if we were live yet, and then,
yeah.
and then the worst case scenario played itself out, and we're all still here, so
we're alive.
It's okay.
All right, so let's jump into the news. I think everyone knows what the news is this week.
Yeah.
But we're not going to talk about it that much. iOS 7 came out on Wednesday. It's here. It's cool. Get used to it.
It's not that cool.
No, it's iOS 7. I actually haven't even used it yet because none of my devices support it. I think my old iPod does, but anyway.
Christmas.
Yeah, so we did a lot of stuff, but none of it is really discussion worthy. We've all talked about, you know, what we think of iOS 7, what all the new features that are coming. We've talked about all that at great length. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to tell you that if you have upgraded to iOS 7 or if you care about iOS 7, you should go to our show notes, which will be in the link to the link in the description of this podcast, and you'll be able to see all of our iOS 7 coverage, including everything that's kind of moved.
A lot of stuff
in comparison
moved
to iOS 6, a lot of it has moved around, you know, like Spotlight Search. Mm-hmm.
And some in weird ways.
Turning off cellular data. Yeah, some of it is kind of wonky. But
some
so we
of
have
it's
a,
good, some of it's not.
We have a video that shows all of that off, tells you kind of everything that's moved and where it's gone. So you can go check that out. We have a post on all of the apps that have already updated for iOS 7 and are either using the new iOS 7 look or they're using some of iOS 7's new features like the background downloading and background syncing, stuff like that.
It's a big bonus.
Is a big, big deal, yeah. So you can see kind of all the apps that are already taking advantage of that. And Thorin did a really big post on all of iOS 7's biggest annoyances or features, depending on your point of view in any given situation, like parallax. I'm sure some people love that, but other people would call that an annoyance. So it's how to turn that off, how to kind of disable some of the new things they've added that maybe you don't like.
You know, the sad thing about that, though, is I was going to turn it off, but it turns off all the motion, and there's actually some really cool motion, I think.
It turns off all animations?
Not all animations, but it reduces a lot of the motion. Like, if you're in the Messages app and you scroll around, the messages kind of, like, bump around with each other. Probably most people don't care about it, but I think it's cute.
Yeah.
So I like having that on, but I just, you know, if you really hate parallax on your home screen, you can just put a kind of a solid color wallpaper or a gradient wallpaper, and then you don't
notice.
Yeah, then there's no nausea effect. And then you can still have all the other motions. So that's
a bonus tip.
I have a lot of bonus tips today.
It's not so much that I hate the feature. I just worry that it would slow down any device that wasn't made like yesterday.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean,
I haven't tried it, so I don't know.
On my iPad Mini, it's a little choppy sometimes.
You have an iPad Mini?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you did. And then I have the iPad. I don't have a regular iPad. As soon as the iPad Mini came out, I was like, iPad. I've wanted that forever. I hate the big ones.
Did you get it on your iPod Touch, Eric?
No, I had the fourth gen, so I didn't get it on there either.
Okay.
Yeah, same situation here.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah, our iPod. Our testing.
It's weird because isn't it on the iPhone 4 though?
Yeah, you. I think you can actually get it. It's on the iPhone 4S.
But not the 4S, but I thought it was on the 4 too, with like severely reduced features.
Yeah, they tend to push the iPod Touches seem to just not get as much stuff.
It's weird.
Because they're iPod Touches. I think Apple, yeah. As I said last week or the week before or whatever it was, that, you know, it's on its way out. It's just a matter of time.
The iPod Touch, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, those are kind of our three big posts this week. So I highly recommend that you go check those out and kind of get acquainted with iOS 7 with those. And our sister site Gizmodo had some cool stuff too. So
yeah.
That's basically all of that in one place for you to easily catch up on all of the iOS 7 goodness.
Except for one thing.
Except for one or 10 things, really.
Yeah, we'll have a top 10 secret features of iOS 7 coming this weekend. There are actually, I think every year Apple advertises some cool stuff, but the coolest stuff is what they don't talk about, or at least a few of them are. We'll tease one of the tips a little bit later. However, you should go on Saturday morning and check out the full list if you really want to delve into iOS 7 and see some of the cool stuff that you might not know about. It's a good list. I am excited about it.
Cool. All right, so that's it for iOS 7. We may mention iOS 7 again at one point in this podcast, but
then no more.
Or like 5 points.
All right, so
let's talk about Android.
Yeah, so I was trying to kind of balance the Android news with the iOS news this week, which just ended up kind of being a mobile heavy show. But CyanEngine Mod announced some cool stuff this week, and we're not seeing a ton of it yet, but it is newsworthy. I thought that basically CyanEngine Mod. Kind of split off, like started their own company, CyanEngine Incorporated. Mm-hmm. And so they're really pushing for kind of a new CyanEngine Mod experience where, you know, I think they said they were coming out with an app for the Play Store that will update CyanEngine Mod for you.
Kind of install it even.
Yeah, install it.
That's cool.
You know, they're going to make the update process a little bit easier, I think, and try and roll out updates faster and for more devices and kind of really become this professional operating system rather than this admittedly popular smaller community kind of project. And it's still going to be very community based, and I think there's, you know, I think I don't want to quote them on this, but I'm sure that the majority of it is still going to be free. You know, they may have paid features or something now that they're actually trying to make money off this, but you know, and I didn't look into it super deeply, so Eric, maybe you know more than I do about this.
Well, basically the view is that they're supposed to be kind of like the way you have in the desktop Linux world, you have alternative distributions of Android, or of Linux, rather. That's what CyanEngine Mod is aiming for this to be, is CyanEngine Mod, instead of being, it's been viewed mostly as an AOSP version of Android with a couple of extra features, but you'll notice that over the last few months, they've been adding CyanEngine Mod accounts, they've been adding a lot of, what was it, Privacy Guard, Voice Plus, a whole bunch of new features and apps specific to CyanEngine Mod, so it's going to be a version of the ROM that's competing with stock Android rather than replicating it so much.
Right.
So, and they want to be able to bring that to more users directly, either, I'm not sure exactly all of the ways that they'll distribute it, but yeah, so the Play Store is one way, and you can probably expect them to pitch it as less of just a community enthusiast tool and more of a real version of Android.
Yeah. The same way we view like TouchWiz or Sense, it could be
exactly.
Real Android replacement. I'd really like to see, it'd be cool to see if devices came out with CyanEngine Mod on them or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, if they were to work with carriers or manufacturers or something.
That would be really exciting.
And it's funny you brought up Linux distributions, because it's funny, they have kind of moved from being like the Arch Linux or something like that to being Ubuntu or Red Hat kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like there's an actual company behind it.
I was almost going to say that they're the Canonical of Android now, but I would actually guess Google would be the Canonical of Android.
Kind of. Also, I feel like lately Canonical has a bad connotation with them, with a lot of people.
No, it's great. They're coming out with some super powered hardware that no one's going to invest in. It's great.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's pretty exciting. And obviously, we will update you guys as soon as new stuff actually comes out that you can use. But I thought that was some exciting Android news from this week.
Yeah.
Because I heart CyanEngine Mod.
I just think it's really cool to see that evolution.
Yeah. I think it's really cool that they've been able to do this, and that they've been taking so many of the developers that have been working on it for years, and that's like they're doing it full time. This is their job now. I'm always shocked that they were able to do as much as they did during their free time, essentially.
Yeah.
That's really crazy.
It's really a beautiful step and a beautiful story.
Right. This week on Lifetime, the story of Cyanogen Mod.
Lifetime hacker.
From rags to ROM.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to our top stories.
Sure.
So moving off that, I'm going to go to you, Eric. Start with you, because your top story was Android related. And
yes, it was.
And
surprise.
It was all about something very new and different on Android. Widgets.
It's widgets. now, I've loved widgets ever since. I want to say it was 1.5 or 1.6, whenever it was that they came out. But they've always kind of sucked most of Android's life, I think, because developers didn't really do much with them. But now they're really awesome.
And they're kind of a battery life killer and performance killer and stuff like that, too, for a really long time, especially on those older phones like the Motorola Droid or whatever came after that.
What isn't that? It's just like, I feel like you put anything on your phone these days. True. It's like, bye-bye battery.
Wasn't there a survey or something recently that said, like, the majority of people don't use widgets on their Android phone, too?
Well, actually, that was HTC's, like, customer research or something. They said that, like, 9 out of 10 of their customers didn't use widgets on their phone, which is, I think that sort of led to the Blink Feed thing. But yeah, there are a lot of, like, the nerd community that would kind of read a site like Lifehacker, I think a lot of us would use them, but like your mom or your aunt or someone, they're not going to go through and tweak their home screen, but they really should, because there's a lot of cool stuff out there. I don't have a single home screen that doesn't have some kind of widget on it, because I don't like launching apps to do things.
Well, yeah, and it's kind of the thing is, I never use a ton of widgets, particularly because they would always slow down my phone, but there were some that were, the benefits were kind of high enough that it made it worth it productivity-wise. Like, my to-do list was the example I always like to give out to people, because I am not one of those people that, like, remembers to look at my to-do list to see what I need to do. I need it to be kind of in my face and always, like, you know, in the corner of my screen saying, like, oh, hey, you need to do these things today, or, like... And so having a widget on my home screen was always nice, because, you know, even if I'm doing something else on my phone, I would see that and, like, constantly be reminded of the stuff that I have to do.
Yeah, because you don't want to be pinged constantly either. Like, that's...
Right, I don't want notifications.
Yeah, because that gets really annoying. It's like, no, I'm doing this other thing on my list. Leave me alone.
Right, I just want to, like, remember. And so widgets were really great for stuff like that.
Yeah. I also really like it for a unified remote is one of my favorites, which using your phone to control your PC may not be the most common usage, but... Like, I used to use Unified Remote by switching from the mouse and the media remotes, going back and forth between those two. But putting the media remotes, like volume up and down, on the same home screen as the Unified Remote is actually faster, because I go to Unified Remote if I want to use a mouse cursor, but if I just want to turn the volume up or down, it's right there on the home screen.
So Unified Remote, for those who don't know, I haven't used it a lot, but I think my brother uses it a ton. It basically lets you control everything on your PC with one app, right? Whether it be like Spotify or you know, a mouse and keyboard or a bunch of other stuff like that, right?
Yeah, it's got a ton of specialized remotes. So
I think it's kind of a niche thing, like you say, but it's a niche thing in a big way, because I've never used a remote app for anything significant, because you have to unlock your phone and then you have to open the remote app. And like you're saying, you usually just want to turn up the volume or like turn on a TV or something.
It's faster to get up and walk over.
Yeah, it's just like I'd rather get up and do it or find another remote. Like it really defeats the purpose when you have to go through a bunch of steps to open an app. It's not faster or more convenient, so why bother with it? But if you have it on your lock screen... It may be more niche, but it's more niche because it's inconvenient. Because of the widget, it may be something that a lot of people would appreciate.
Well, I think there are two things there. It's not just that you can have all of your different remotes on one widget as opposed to the app, which is cool, but I think the addition of widgets to the lock screen in Jelly Bean... Was it Jelly Bean or Ice Cream Sandwich?
One of the Jelly Bean versions,
That made widgets so much cooler, and that's when things like Dash Clock came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That really kind of took it to a new level.
Exactly.
I like Dash Clock.
I'm not using it right now, and I don't remember why, but you're using it, right, Eric?
Yeah, I'm using it. I've depending on which device I'm on, it gives more or less information. But like on my phone, I've got an indicator of how many emails I've got, any text messages, if my battery gets low, a mobile usage indicator, so I can just see at a glance how much data I've been using on my data plan.
And it's all that like right on your lock screen, right? Or your home screen. So you don't have to
I can't have it on my lock screen. I personally use it on my main home screen.
Okay.
But yeah, other people can put it on their lock screen too. So however it works for you.
Okay, cool. So, but yeah, and that one's cool because it has like different plugins and stuff too. So, like, the, oh, you know, so you have the maker plugins of Dash Clock, but then you have like, if you have Google Voice, you can get a Google Voice plugin for it that tells you how many Google Voice messages you have and stuff like that. Yeah. All kind of.
There's one plugin that is like you can plug any other app's notifications into it. So,
oh, that's
it's
really
a
cool.
Plugin of plugins. So,
and it's easier than like pulling down the notification bar or for certain things that you don't want to necessarily get pinged about or clutter that up with.
Right.
So that Dash Clock is definitely cool. If you haven't checked it out, go to the Play Store and download it and check out the plugins available, because it is one of the coolest apps or widgets around on Android, I think, right now. So
it really is.
Anyway, so you can check out Eric's full post along with a list of all of the awesome widgets that people probably don't use enough over at Lifehacker, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. So. Switching gears back to iOS.
Oh, God.
And after this, I think we're done with some mobile news for a while. But you tell us about living inside Apple's prison. I mean, walled garden.
Well, that's fair. I mean, walled garden makes it sound nice. And
it does.
Yeah. And I feel like I spent a month learning to become an Apple apologist. That's really what it felt like a lot. And honestly, it's not that bad. Apple makes a lot of effort to make it really easy if you stay in their ecosystem. They want to define the way you should use your stuff because they think they know best, which in a lot of cases they do know better, but third-party apps have done some incredible work and have made big strides, and it's frustrating that you have to use Apple's defaults. It's really difficult to integrate a third-party app into your workflow when Apple, you know, you try to share something in another app and it uses Apple's mail instead of your mail. So there are some things that are really difficult to set up if you want to have a third party. So I thought, okay, well, what would it be like if I just did whatever Apple wanted? Would I get really frustrated or not? And I found that a lot of the problems that I thought I would have because I just kind of got used to third-party apps, I could just get used to Apple's apps in a lot of those cases and not really have a whole lot of problems. So the walled garden, in some cases, is good. I think when it comes to email, using Apple's email, you lose some features, but they're pretty minor. Apple does a good job of updating stuff, not frequently, but you know, I mean, keeping up with the email features, how much do you really need, honestly?
Yeah.
And there, when you're email on your phone, I think like
well, I think the big thing about the email is that it's so not Gmail centric that it you lose things like labels, and that's.
But in iOS 7, it's a bit better. I feel like the labels are it doesn't look like Gmail labels. It's not as colorful as something like Sparrow, where it's a nice interface and blah blah blah. But at least the stupid flag icon is gone and it's a dot.
Yeah.
I love that Gmail. I mean, this is a dumb thing, but I love that Gmail has stars because it's just like this. Yes, star. That's nice. I appreciate that. That looks good. And Apple uses this stupid flag, and they still call it flagging, but it's at least an orange circle now.
That's fine.
So I'm like, okay, I can live with that. But for the most part, it's not, you know, there's not a really huge difference. iOS 7 gives you a lot more options in terms of what you can move around. It integrates with it's definitely
you get background downloading, which is such a huge thing.
Yeah. See, like the thing is with Sparrow, I don't mind that I don't get notified with emails. I actually turn off email notifications on my phone, period. The only thing I get are SMS and IMs. So when it comes to email, I don't even care about that. But when I open up Sparrow to be like, hey, I want to see what email I have, I have to wait for it to download all of it, and then if there's something I want to read, then I have to wait for that message to download, whereas Apple's mail, Apple downloaded immediately.
Right, exactly.
So we can get into a lot of examples about this. There are plenty of things where it gets kind of nitty-gritty, but for the most part, a lot of Apple stuff you can use, and you can just get like think about the if you are frustrated that a third-party app just isn't working particularly well, then see if you can handle Apple stuff. Figure out what features you like about that third-party app. Make sure Apple's app can't do that for you.
Yeah.
Because if it can, you might as well just be using it. I'd prefer, and I think everyone would prefer, if Apple would make it possible for third-party developers to have the default and let you choose, because it's really not something that's, you know, a functional problem.
Right.
It's that Apple wants control and thinks they know what's best. And so obviously that would be ideal. But in terms of dealing with reality, if you want to use an iPhone and you prefer kind of the no-hassle experience, then consider what features you'd actually need and maybe stick within the walled garden for those and only veer outside when Apple stuff is just way too frustrating for you.
There was So I've been doing this lately too, because, and as I mentioned on the show before, I'm running an iPad 1, which is so slow that none of the third-party apps can run on it with any sort of, like, mm-hmm. not crappiness. So yeah. I'm using Safari again. I'm using the default videos app. But I think the best way you put it at the end of this piece was that, like, you know, look, if you really, really want to be able to use all these third-party apps, yeah, it'd be nice if Apple did that, but they don't. And mm-hmm. if you buy an iPhone, that's kind of like what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah.
You're never going to have the experience you really want on iOS if you can't, if you really can't live within Apple's walled garden, you're mm-hmm. not going to be that much happier living outside it. You're going to be happier on Android.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the main thing that I took away. And that was, I kind of wish I had read it a while ago, because, mm-hmm. you know, I tried out iOS for 6 months and that was the exact reason I left.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, let's move on to some questions. Our first question comes from a caller.
I love the show. I was just wondering about power line adapters for internet. It seems a little too good to be true. For $40, I can wire up my whole apartment and get wired internet at any point in the house. So I was wondering what the drawbacks are for these as opposed to, you know, traditional wireless and wired internet. Thanks.
Okay, so yes, there are a few downsides to using power line adapters, though they can be really great. So I use power line adapters in my house. And the one thing that you're going to see a lot is that it really depends on your house or apartment and your electrical wiring and stuff like that. Especially if you live like kind of in an older house, they may not work as well because they just may not be able to use the power lines as efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
And you're never going to get like gigabit speeds over power line, at least not at the moment.
I hate that they advertise that too, because it's... I know. I've had gigabit power line adapters and got maybe 2 megabytes a second as a network speed.
Right.
And so that's not cool.
You're not going to get that. If you do that, you need a really long Ethernet cable.
That's what's happening right now.
Where power line adapters are useful is if you're just trying to get the same internet speeds with the reliability of wired as opposed to Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I use it for in my apartment, is I essentially have the router hooked up to a power line adapter. And then that goes into my living room where my, you know, the modem, and then my network switch and the router and all that are in the living room. So it's basically the only thing that's going over the power line is my internet, which is going to be much slower than my power line's upper limit.
Mm-hmm.
That may not be the case in your house.
In my house, it's terrible. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, because your internet even slows down.
Yeah.
And internet is relatively slow when we're talking about comparing it to actual network speeds and the speed of Ethernet. So it doesn't actually make a difference. But
yeah, so I mean, I think it comes down to that, yes, they're worth it if they work in your home, but buy them with a good return policy.
Yes.
Because you might not, they might
That's
not work
out
so well.
You definitely need to test them out in your home before you kind of commit to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's what I ended up doing. You know, in my old place, I ended up returning them because it didn't work. But in my new place, they work great.
Yeah.
Although I can't do it when I'm, if I'm vacuuming, the internet speeds tank. Which isn't really a problem because I'm usually not like holding my laptop vacuuming using the internet.
But you might be, downloading something.
Yeah, if I'm downloading something and I start vacuuming, my download speed is going to tank because I'm using the electricity, or using the wiring in my apartment for electricity and not the internet. Mm-hmm. But in most power line adapters, we'll have a little light on it that lets you know, like, if your speeds are up or down as a result.
Yeah. And just as an alternative to power line adapters, there's another... I haven't had good luck with these either. I just get a big Ethernet cable at the end. But MoCA adapters, M-O-C-A, they run internet through the coaxial cable in your house. So if you have cable wired all through your house and your power lines suck, you can try those. They're about the same price. For some people, they're amazing. For other people, they just don't work at all.
Interesting. So
something else to look into. Again, you want to have a... excellent return policy.
Yeah. Alternatively, you could just wire your house. If you live in a house, alternatively, you could just wire your house for Ethernet.
Yeah.
And we've done a post on how to do that, and so I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Hey, Eric's back.
Oh, I'm back this time.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We got kicked out, so now we're back. But anyway, so you can, you know, if okay. you have the time and the patience, you could wire up your house for Ethernet. We have a guide on how to do that, so I'll put a link to that in the show notes mm-hmm. as well. But so those are kind of your options. Try it out. You may be fine depending on what you're trying to use it for.
Cool. Okay, so we have a long question to make up for that short one. Shall I?
Yes, go ahead. Okay. Unless Eric has anything that he wanted to mention about power line adapters, even though he wasn't there for most of it.
No, I'm good.
Okay.
All right. So 3 months ago, I started a new job. This is, you know, the listener writing in, or a new career, you can call it. I did great. I got a promotion on my first day of work. My company has probably spent at least $5,000 on training me, and they've supplied me with a phone, a vehicle, and a brand new office. This is the job I've always wanted, and now that I have it, I don't know if I want it anymore. It's very stressful. I have not seen many results, and the bad has been outweighed by the good. And every day, my anxiety is so bad, I have diarrhea. I don't think I want this job anymore. I have read the Should I Quit My Job checklist at Lifehacker, and it definitely seems as though I have made a wrong move by coming here. But after the company has invested so much money and time into me, plus all the perks, it's making me hard to leave. It's making it hard to leave. It hard for me to leave.
Okay.
So this is a complicated situation. We actually asked for more context here to find out what was causing the problem. And in this specific situation, he's having an issue with the work itself. It's not, you know, the employer. It's not a bad boss. It's not, you know, I hate everybody at work, or I don't like the hours I have to work, I'm stressed out, or whatever. It's not a job-related thing so much. It's the actual work. He deals with certain customers and sales, and... the customers aren't very nice.
Yeah.
And it's hard to make a sale. They just kind of care. And he doesn't feel like his work is making a difference. And by now, we probably are all familiar with that Harvard study where they looked at different workers, and they kept changing, like, the light in there. Mm-hmm. And they were studying, like, oh, if we, you know, make the light brighter or whatever, will their productivity go up? And every time they made a change, it went up. And then they made the light really bad, and their productivity still went up. And it was because someone was watching them and invested and cared about, you know, how well they were doing, and that caused them to work harder and do better. So when people don't feel like their job means anything or is going anywhere or is functional, it's really easy to get anxious and not want to do it.
Yeah. So I think I'll first say that it sounds like you've kind of already answered your own question and made a decision about whether you want to be at this job or not. But I think it sounds to me like the biggest reason he's not quitting is because this, you know, he knows that this company has invested a lot of money and time into training him.
Yeah, it's a loyalty / guilt situation.
And they haven't, and because they haven't done anything wrong, he feels bad. And so the first thing I would do, especially, you know, before you go getting ready to quit or anything, talk to your employer, because they probably feel the exact same way you do. You know, they've invested a lot of time and money into you, and they want to make sure you're happy and don't want you to leave and basically throw all of their money and time down the drain.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that they'd be more open than the average employer even to trying to help you out and make it a better experience for you working there.
Yeah, and if you can't talk to the employee, if you feel uncomfortable talking to your boss or your manager, and hopefully your manager is a good one and you can talk to him or her, chances are you have, after 3 months, you should know a couple of people. You should have a colleague that is, you know, that you can trust and discuss things with. So in the event that in the event that you can't talk to your manager, try to talk to somebody there that you know, a colleague that you know, and get advice there. You can kind of work your way up the line before you take the risk of, you know, going to your boss with that information. But I definitely think the most important, you don't like just want to quit a job arbitrarily. And obviously he doesn't feel that way because he's writing in and not sure about it, even though things are not going well. So you don't just want to leave, but I think it helps to take as many steps as you can, do your due diligence, try to make the situation better if you can make it better. Get advice from other people. I'm sure you're not the first person to deal with this. Sales is a difficult thing. You have to, I mean, having worked in a customer facing position in the past, it can be very, very frustrating. And I stayed in it for a couple of years and then kind of lost my mind and had to go.
You could even make a parallel to the job you have now.
I guess there are lots of wonderful people that we deal with, but there are also a lot of trolls on the internet. So
not on YouTube though.
Of course not here.
If you sat in the YouTube comments of the show before, you see that while many of you are awesome, there's always like one person in there who's being,
you know, who you are,
an ass. Something.
I got a great user script for YouTube.
Asterisk.
I got a great user script for YouTube that just hides the comments automatically. And there are a lot of these out there, but I like this one because the button that turns the back on is just a really big link that says "Show hideous cluster." You'll have to silence that out for the audio version of this show.
Boy. Couldn't you have just beeped yourself? I was like, no, don't say this. Now I have to do something.
But I like to give you more work. It makes me laugh every time instead of having to read the comments, which make me cry. Not really. So
on the subject of the job thing, mind if I say something though?
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. I've had to like switch careers like two or three times. First, I left my very profitable career as a cart pusher. But then when I was a video editor, I was kind of in that same position where like I had a company that was, they spent some time training me, not nearly like $5,000 worth in the first few months. But if you're going to leave a job to go do something else that's more fulfilling, or any job you're going to leave, you're going to upset someone and you're going to lose them some kind of investment. So I always say do what Winston and Adam said, you know, talk to your coworkers, talk to your boss. But at the end of the day, if you know you're going to do it, you can't stay just because your boss might not like it or because there are perks, because there's always going to be those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If nothing else, the perk of having a job.
Yeah.
So.
I think the thing is to make it as easy of a transition as possible. Offer to train. If you do decide to leave, offer to train people in. Instead of giving 2 weeks notice, give at least a month of notice. Say that, you know, especially in a circumstance where you're leaving early, you should do everything you can to make it pretty much no issue for the company to replace you, and say like, I'll stay as long as you need to, you know, within reason, to replace me. I mean, you can say like, you know, I'll stay as long as you need, so long as that doesn't exceed, so long as you're like actively, you know, making an effort here, train the next person in, give enough of your time to kind of make things work. And then your job will actually probably feel better in those circumstances because, one, you know you get to go, you have an end date. For some people, that's actually worse because they you know, lose interest and like, oh, I don't have to do anything now. You do have to work maybe even harder when you're planning on going because you want to leave on a good note. You don't want to leave as the guy like, oh, I gave up. There's a I've been hearing stories about someone over at a production company where a friend of mine works who just decided, oh, I don't like this job anymore, so I'm going to go look for another one. And just hasn't been showing up and is like a very high ranked person. Gosh.
I really hope he's not using any current coworkers as a reference.
Yeah. Well, no, they're all like, why isn't he showing up to meetings? Where did he go? He just isn't here. Decided to come in at 12 in the afternoon and then leave at 4. And so...
Don't do that.
I probably shouldn't be talking about this. I was told that I'm not supposed to know about this, but I'm hopefully being vague enough. You don't want to be that guy. You want to be the guy who works really, really hard and goes at, and where they still feel like, oh, I'm losing this asset, but he did, you know, like, but I want this person to be happy because they made such a big effort to make sure that their work was great before they left, and that they made things good for the company, and so that everyone leaves smiling and wants to help each other.
Yeah.
When I left my customer service related job, I made a big effort to do that. I made a big effort not to be a complainer, which I'm a big complainer. So I toned that down a lot in my last month. And I just everybody, like coworkers, my manager, the big boss, like if I needed help with anything, they all helped with references, whatever. I mean, the CEO certainly didn't have to give me a reference, but did. And people just, like, I didn't even have to ask. People just gave me jobs. Like, go interview. I got an interview at Atlantic Records. So it was just like, it was just kind of a crazy situation. So, like, if you're really awesome and you can be really awesome in the end, that helps a lot.
Yeah.
Whitson is noting that I'm talking too much.
We need to move on to the next question.
I love talking about work.
All right. This one's a pretty easy one because, unfortunately, there's no good answer. Jacob writes, is there any way to get all the notifications for Facebook messages that end up in the other's inbox?
That thing.
I know. I'm sure many of you have seen and heard about this, that you have your Facebook messages inbox, and then there's one under other that you don't get any notifications for, basically for people who aren't your friends on Facebook. And they're just like hidden away there, and you might never know that they're there, which is really annoying. So he wants to get notifications for this inbox. Unfortunately, there's not a really good way to do this. You can, if there's a certain thread that you want notifications from, or like a certain person that you want to get notifications for, once they've sent you a message, you can just go to actions and move that message to the inbox. From then on, you will get notifications for it, but you won't get notifications for the first message in a given thread. Social Fixer, the awesome browser extension for Facebook that used to tweak all sorts of crap, used to have an option to show the count of the other inbox on the sidebar, but that's changed now with Facebook's new layout, the new layout with the thing on the side. That's gone. So Social Fixer doesn't have that option anymore. The only thing I can really say is get in the habit of regularly checking your inbox. They have made it a little bit easier to see when you go to your inbox how many unread messages are in that other inbox, but there's not a ton else you can do besides that. Sorry. So, there's like one half tip there for you. We do have a couple live questions that I was catching up on. If I don't know if you guys had any, but Kyle asks, any tips for someone who is about to root their phone for the first time? Yeah, back up a lot.
Yeah.
Read everything 5 times.
We recently, seriously. We recently updated our everything you need to know about Android rooting guide. I highly recommend going and reading that. It's like a huge glossary of all the terms you need to know, like everything from basic things like root and ROM to things like kernel, radio, RUU, SBF, all of these weird terms you hear getting thrown around places like XDA, but as a newbie, you may not know what they mean. Along with a lot of frequently asked questions that people ask about rooting and stuff like that. So that's a really good place to start before you actually get into the rooting. But the main thing I would say is make Nandroid backups whenever you change anything.
I'd also say, I guess you can do this in forums, but especially if you have anyone that has rooted before that has your same phone, because I had this problem when I went from an HTC phone to a Samsung phone, is even though I knew the basic rooting terms, I still didn't know about things like, I want to say Odin was one of the things that was used specifically for Samsung phones that wasn't used on HTC or something. So like even different manufacturers have their own sub-community of tools and definitions. So the more information you can get from a person and the more advice you can get on will this mess up my phone before you do something, the better.
Yeah. Agreed. Okay, so the other question that I had was from Get Started Windows, who asks, is there an easy way to make a podcast playlist to have things like NPR and Lifehacker podcasts lined up so one plays right after the other in Downcast? And yes, there is. But not only can you make playlists just by, you know, hitting something and going add to playlist, there's a really cool way where you can set up certain podcast feeds to automatically add themselves to a specific playlist and kind of create your own little like podcast radio station that whenever new episodes come out, they automatically go onto the playlist with your other podcasts. And we have a post on that. So I will put that in the show notes for you, and you can check it out.
That's so convenient that we actually have a post on that.
I was going to, yes, we already had a, and when I first realized that, it was so awesome, and so I had to just do this guide on how to do it. It's like kind of like having your own little custom talk radio station.
Yeah.
That like can just like bounce between, you know, whatever different topics and shows you like. I find whenever I like a lot of NPR shows, but then whenever I turn on actual NPR, it's never anything good. It's like bluegrass music or something, and I'm like, what is this? It's never NPR, what I want to hear. It's like I've never heard any of the shows I actually like on the radio.
I've been having these weird associations lately. Like when someone said something about soup, and they were talking about the show The Soup, but I thought they were talking about the food
actual soup.
But you said bluegrass music, and I'm like, oh, I'm allergic to that. So mine works in mysterious ways.
What are you actually allergic to?
Bluegrass.
Oh, like blue
Kentucky bluegrass.
Oh, I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah.
I thought that was just like a metaphor.
Is that where bluegrass gets its name from?
It's really pretty, actually. It's cool. When I was getting diagnosed, my doctor was like, okay, so you're allergic to bluegrass. Bluegrass is it's this beautiful grass. It really makes a nice arrangement in the flowers. Don't use it.
Telling you all the things you can't do with it.
Yeah, just like everything I was allergic to. She's like orange juice. You know.
Oh man, I'm glad I'm not allergic to orange juice. That sucks for you.
Yeah, she's like
writing now.
She's like, I know it's really delicious, but I mean, you shouldn't have juice anyway. It's just sugar. Just going over all these things. You don't have a dog, do you? Oh, you do.
Oh, that's too
Can
bad.
You not touch it? It was really wonderful.
Oh man.
But we actually have a minute, I think, to answer one more question. I saw one from I think Sick Days. It's hard to read from your computer screen what it was, but it was, you know, do you use a VPN and what do you recommend if you do? And we have some very
I have in the past, and it depends on what you're using a VPN for. You know, if you just say do you use a VPN, that could be for any sort of a million different reasons. I assume that you mean using a VPN service for privacy reasons, as opposed to setting up a VPN in your house to connect to that. We have a lot of recommendations. Let's see, what have I've used Mulvad in the past, which is a pretty cool small service. I've used AirVPN before, which I liked a lot. Alan did a big post about VPNs with a bunch of recommendations, and so we'll add that to the show notes for you. We also did a poll of our readers, and we kind of combined the top five VPNs that everyone uses, and so that's a great list too. And so we'll put both of those in the show notes for you, and that's a really great place to get started with VPNs.
Cool.
Do you guys have anything to add? Any
nope.
services you've really?
I just figured you'd have a.
No.
I've dabbled. Alan is our VPN expert, and he's not on the show today, but he's written a lot about it, so I can throw you some links.
Cool.
Give him some link love. All right.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Let's move on to our tips and downloads of the week.
Sure.
Sweet. Eric, kick us off.
Okay, so I have a really horrible, long, and complicated password, and...
I thought you were going to say a horribly long, complicated tip.
If it is, I probably shouldn't put it in the show.
Yeah.
But sharing your Wi-Fi password via NFC is probably the best use I can think of for the pack of NFC tags I bought a long time ago and haven't been using. But, I normally, whenever anybody invites me or comes over to my house, I invite them over... they want to use my Wi-Fi password, and it is obscenely long and makes no sense whatsoever by design.
Because it's secure. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Good man.
But they all yell at me for it. So I started putting them on tags, and instead of making them enter a long, like 30-digit code, I'll just make them install an NFC app instead and just copy the text that way. So
do they need an NFC app, or do they just need to enable NFC on their phone?
I think some phones do and some phones don't, so I have one to tell them to go download because they should have it anyway.
And so for your iPhone friends, you just stop being friends with them. You're like, nah,
actually,
you know what? If you use an iPhone, I don't really like you.
You should just have a QR
have
code.
No one who comes
them.
To my house has an iPhone.
Yeah. Well, so that's the other thing is I think you can use a QR code for this too, right?
That's true. That's actually the Insta Wi-Fi app. uses a QR code by design and also supports NFC to transfer that. Normally I tell people to download just a generic NFC app because Insta Wi-Fi. I don't do because I'm always home, but yeah. But if I did, like, it's, there was a guy who showed how to, like, he has an NFC tag right by his door, so as he walks in, just taps his phone to that, and his computer will start up by the time he gets to his desk.
Right. Well, and the other thing you could do with that is, like, turn off things like, or, you know, turn Wi-Fi back on when you get home and turn Bluetooth off or whatever. My all-time favorite NFC thing that I'm doing right now is that I have an NFC tag on, like, down on my washing machine. Mm-hmm. And so when I go over and I throw in a load of laundry, I just touch my phone to the machine and it sets a timer for 45 minutes for me.
That's cool.
On my phone.
That's actually not a bad idea. I usually use Google's voice actions for that, but
that's good too.
That's even simpler and I don't have to use my voice like a chum.
Yeah. I've been using voice actions a lot, but that was definitely because setting a timer is like so many taps. So that was like a big upgrade where it's just like, bam, suckers.
Yeah. That's sweet. I wanted to include more of the home automation stuff, which I really want to get into, but that was kind of outside the scope of that article. But I think that, like, with the Wemos, which they now have,
The Belkin Wemo. Switches.
Yeah.
Like, it sounded like you were saying Wemotes. I was like, you're automating a Wemo? Like,
no, I think only the big tablet remote controller has NFC in it. But no, like the Wemo light switches, like $50, you plug it into the wall and it connects to Wi-Fi. I think that integrates with Tasker, so you could get home and just like tap one NFC thing and it turns on all the lights you need in your house or something. So
awesome.
But I,
that's another article for another day.
Seriously.
Okay, let's move on. Oh, hey, it's my tip next.
It is your tip.
Yeah, okay. Ooh. So my tip is very simple, and I never knew this was possible, but it's awesome. Chrome. If you have a lot of tabs open in Chrome, as many of us often do, you may or may not know that you can select multiple tabs in the same way you select multiple items in, you know, Windows Explorer or the Finder. You just click on one, hit Control, click on the other, and you've selected multiple tabs. What's really cool is that on Windows, for some reason this doesn't work on OS X, I don't know why, you can select multiple tabs and then drag the, you know, peel them all off into their own window, or drag multiple tabs from one window to another.
Yeah, it's really frustrating because you can select the tabs in OS X.
Yeah, I don't know why
but it doesn't work on OS X. Like, I can't grab them, I don't know why.
But it was so awesome, and I wish they had this feature in Firefox, because I constantly find myself in situations where I already have two windows open and I need to move like four of the tabs from one into the other. And it's really nice that you can easily do that in Chrome. And it's one of those things that when you realize it, you're like, oh, duh, that makes sense. But I'd never tried it before to see. So that's my tip.
Cool. My tip, well, I actually have two tips. One of them is a little hint towards iOS 7. But first, I don't know if you're all having a lot of like really vigorous sex. But or if you just, you know, move around in your bed and it bangs against the wall a lot, whatever the case may be, if you have a headboard that's noisy or frustratingly wobbly, we found a tip this week that was pretty cool. You can get these little they're like screw-in furniture pads.
Yeah.
And
like you put on the bottom of like a chair leg or something, so you can scratch up your floor.
Yeah, but they're attached to a screw in this case, and then you can just drill a hole into your headboard, because generally the baseboard of your wall separates the headboard from the wall, and that's what causes the motion and the banging, because it's not, you know, perfectly attached to the bed, and or the bed moves or whatever. So if you put these pads on there, then you can kind of make the headboard a little bit more flush to the wall in terms of motion.
Yeah.
So when you whatever you're doing, banging against the headboard for whatever reason, if you're just like jumping on the bed or...
Well, I actually, my old bed frame was just, I think it was kind of poorly made, and so I ended up getting a new one. But for, you know, a few weeks there, even if nothing was crazy was happening in the bed, even if I just like rolled over in the middle of the night, it would bang against the wall because it was so loose.
And yeah,
so,
I had that problem too, because my bed, I had a bed with the headboard was actually good, but it had moved so many times that it just, the attachment thing broke. Yeah. So
this is a nice tip, and it's cool because the pads not only kind of like push it up against the wall, but because they're soft, you know, if they do hit, they'll make a much quieter noise.
Yep.
So it's a good tip.
So that's...
This segment is the hardest one I've had to adapt to from the Android Police podcast.
This one?
There's so many jokes I can't make
because he can't make dirty jokes on our iTunes family friendly podcast. And yeah. Dodges apparently doesn't like silencing things out and gets mad at us when we swear.
Well, because I have to go through and find it.
I made a note. It says swears at 9:69.
Yeah, that's
I actually don't know what that means, but
no, it's at 32. Oh. If you want to write that down,
swears at 32. Okay, but, there we go.
But yeah, aside from that, we have a series of tips actually coming out on Saturday for iOS 7, the secret features of iOS 7.
iOS 7, comma, secret features of.
Yes. And I'm just going to name one. I didn't know about this until recently. I'm super excited about it because we get people asking us constantly how do I block a call on my cell phone? How do I block this text message? I'm being harassed, etc. Harassment sucks. It really is crappy that Apple hasn't provided a feature for you to block calls or texts on the phone. You have to call your carrier, and sometimes your carrier won't do anything.
Unless you pay extra.
Yes, unless you pay extra, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And
always.
Yeah, so if you want to block someone, upgrade to iOS 7 because it's now an option. It's there. So you just go into your settings and you can enable it in the phone or the messages section. There's just a blocked awesome. People.
I don't know why. That seems like a feature they would have advertised.
I know. Why not advertise it? Why integrate it now?
Everyone wants that feature.
Yeah. So you know it. Now you got it.
Yay.
Upgrade. And there are nine other, there are four other really cool ones and then another five that are, you might like, you might not care about.
Someone just tweeted one of them at me while the show was happening. Like, whoa, did you guys know you could do this? And I was like, yeah, it's coming.
I wonder what it is.
It was the timestamp one.
Oh, the timestamp.
You can see timestamps in your messages.
In messages, yeah.
Like
that,
swiping or something.
I like that a lot. I always need to know when something happened because people say, you forgot this. I'm like, no, I didn't forget it. It came in at this time.
Yeah, so 10 more features this Saturday. Watch out. If it's past Saturday, you can look in the show notes and it'll maybe be there if I remember to do it.
Yeah.
Or swears at 32. Remember to put things in the show notes. All right. Let's go on to downloads. Eric, what was your favorite download this week?
Mine was Chirp, which is, I like it for very nerdy reasons. I'm not sure how practical it is, but basically.
Yeah, it's amazing. Just show everybody.
Yeah. So basically what Chirp does is it allows you to send links, notes, and pictures via a sound. I have my tablet right here to the left of my head and my phone right here to the right. I'm going to tap a button. You guys should be able to hear it. It sounds so cool and robotic.
That was really cool. Except nothing happened on your tablet.
It's happening. Isn't it?
Oh, this is so sad because the demonstration in the pre-show meeting worked really perfectly. But now it isn't.
Let me try that one more time.
It didn't go. Oh, there we go.
There it goes. It may also have been because of my internet because... apparently, Comcast decided to drop from 50 megabits per second down to 0.5. Right as I'm doing the podcast. But yeah. So, you can send links or notes or pictures through that. It's basically an audio QR code. So
back to QR codes again.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. But the neat thing is that, one, any device that can hear that can scan it. So you could send it to five devices, you can send it to a room full of people at once, or for example, anyone who's listening to the podcast can get that link that I just sent too.
If they have the app,
you just have Chirp open to hear the sound. So
this is another one of those things where it's like, okay, well, none of your friends are really going to necessarily have this app for you to send stuff to, but it does seem really useful for what you just did, which is like if you're on your phone and you get home and you want to send something to your tablet. It's faster than scanning a QR code. It's faster than copying and pasting that link and sending it. You just play the sound on your tablet's there and opens it up.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's really cool. Very cool.
Mm.
All right. Moving on. It's mine. My download is AnyDo. Many of you have heard of this before. This week, they released a packaged Chrome app.
You know where they may have heard of it? I think last week we did it as a download, too.
Did we? Yeah. Well, they've been just updating like a storm, basically. Okay,
yeah.
Well, here's the thing.
Well, no, it wasn't them. It was because it was for the app directory.
Oh, well, perfect timing then. I have always liked their mobile apps, but they never had a desktop app, which kind of irked me, and I don't use Chrome, so I couldn't use the Chrome extension. What's cool about this is that this is one of Chrome's new packaged apps, which means that it runs separately from Chrome in its own window that looks like a desktop app, acts like a desktop app, has offline support, and can do all sorts of other things that web apps can't necessarily do. So, AnyDo now has this. It's separate from their Chrome extension, which is still available, but it's very cool. It just kind of puts the whole interface into its own little window. Even if you are a Firefox user like I am, you can use this as your desktop to-do app as long as you have Chrome installed on your computer. It's very cool. I highly recommend it. Works on Windows and Mac right now, I think.
I'm sure it works on Chrome OS, too.
And in Chrome OS. I don't think Linux has packaged apps, but I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, but the thing is, I think it really demonstrates, you know, where
Chrome OS does, so Linux might too, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it demonstrates where Chrome OS can go as an actual thing people could use, because it's starting to be like, oh, this looks like an app now. It doesn't feel like a website anymore.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, just for my desktop computer, I think it's awesome.
Yeah,
I agree. Especially because I'm not a Chrome user. And it's awesome that I can get all of these. Yeah, I can basically use these Chrome extensions and Chrome apps without giving up my beloved Firefox. Okay.
Aw, yay.
What was your download, Adam?
What was my download? I believe it was SimpleNote, because SimpleNote not only came out for Android recently, but it just came out for the Mac yesterday. And we've always had notational velocity for the Mac, which syncs with SimpleNote. And SimpleNote is just it's like, you know, you use Evernote if you want to put everything into your notes. SimpleNote is if you just want plain text that syncs and remembers versions and has some simple styling like bold and italic. If you use a third-party app, some of that stuff doesn't work. Like the bold and italic doesn't always sync properly, which is kind of annoying if you like it. And also the versioning, you can't, you know, scroll back in time and forward in time in what you've typed.
Yeah, you also have to go to the SimpleNote web app to do that.
Yep. And you don't have to worry about that anymore, because SimpleNote now has a Mac app. It's really just missing the Windows counterpart, but who knows? I mean, they've been kind of staggering the releases, so it wouldn't surprise me if a Windows one showed up in a week.
Well, yeah, now that SimpleNote has an Android app, they might, you know, they might move to Windows eventually.
I know they've wanted to, because Pash and I were developing SimpleNote third-party app for Windows at one point, and we just never finished it. They were like, we really want that.
Rizoff Notes is kind of the notational velocity clone for Windows, but it's not anywhere close to as good as notational velocity is. It was really frustrating in a lot of cases, and I ended up just quitting it and moving to Evernote.
Yeah.
Which ended up being a good thing. But yeah, so it would be nice if they had that for Windows as well. But SimpleNote is pretty sweet.
Yes, it is.
Cool. All right. I think that's it for our show today.
It is.
For those of you watching live, sorry about the Hangouts issues. We are actively working on them with the Hangouts team, so I promise.
Yes. They're
will
watching
maybe get better.
Us all right now.
I promise that things will maybe get better. So if you guys like the show, please go rate us on iTunes. That helps us a ton. That's where most people find the show, and that's kind of how people judge whether they want to listen to it or not. And we're actually pretty high on the iTunes charts in technology. It's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. We're in like the top 5 or something, I think, which is a shocker to me.
But we really appreciate that.
That's all because of you guys. Yeah, we appreciate that a lot. So thank you guys for listening, and thanks for those of you who have rated and left reviews and stuff. You guys are truly awesome.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to get in touch with us directly and leave us, you know, give us reviews, constructive criticism about the show, whatever, ask questions, you can hit all of us up on our individual accounts on Twitter and Facebook and Google+, and you can find information for those accounts at lifehacker.com/about.
Yeah, don't like the V-neck I'm wearing.
Don't like the V-neck. Last week, someone liked the V-neck you were wearing, so I don't know.
Someone did and someone didn't.
Yeah, it's the biggest controversy.
I'm so sorry.
Apple versus iOS versus Android is no longer a controversy for life hackers. It's all about the V-neck.
V-neck versus crew neck will be our next flame war.
Do you guys remember a couple months ago when actually the biggest argument on the internet that everyone was talking about was whether men should wear shorts? It was literally the dumbest conversation I've ever seen the internet have in my entire life.
I actually encountered that one when people were talking about how much people were talking about that, and I hadn't heard anything up until that point, but suddenly I was on the bandwagon.
Yeah, it was the worst. It was just like I had to quit Twitter for a week because I couldn't handle how stupid everyone sounded even mentioning it.
If I could not wear shorts right now, I have to deny the world my beautiful pasty legs. And That wouldn't be fair.
But
so...
really, more importantly, we live in Southern California and we would probably have heat stroke. Like, that's just a thing. It's like 100 degrees here in the summer. So, yeah, I'm going to wear shorts. Anyway, that was absolutely not the purpose of whatever I was saying, which was, if you want to follow the site and see all of these posts that we talk about as they go up during the week, you can follow us on Twitter at Lifehacker, on Facebook at facebook.com/Lifehacker, and the Google Plus at plus.google.com/PlusLifehacker. And I promise, never, ever, ever will we be talking about Miley Cyrus or whether men should wear shorts or any of
just
the...
did.
Except, no, I mean on the Twitter or Facebook or Google Plus. Oh, let me finish my sentence.
See, I was actually about to
The podcast is off limits. We'll talk about anything on the podcast, but usually we'll talk about how stupid it is that everyone else is talking about it. Our feeds
See, I was about to pitch the shorts thing as my next Ask Lifehacker, but there goes that idea.
I'm a man. Should I wear shorts? Thank you, Lifehacker. Questions we will never answer.
I just want a day where we can answer inane stuff like that. Yeah. I just want to do that.
I'm just going to blow right by that. You can find the show notes for this and this episode in the description of this podcast. You can find the show notes for this and every other episode at lifehacker.com/the show. The show notes go up every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific time. So if you watch this show live, sorry, you have to wait a couple hours for all those links that I just promised you. But they'll be there. That is it for us this week at Lifehacker. We will see you guys next time.
That's it for everyone. I got to go edit out some swears. If you'd like to ask us a question, send an email to tips+asklhshow@lifehacker.com or give us a call at 347-687-8109. Keep your questions as short as you can so we can keep the show moving right along. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Welcome to Lifehacker. This week,